The following program includes the opinions of Conk News and those of the call-in participants. It does not reflect the views of our sponsors. It's Sunday night, August 28th, 2022, all across America. And from the pages of Conk News at Conktown News and the headquarters of Conk News at Broadway and Central in Northeast Minneapolis, USA, welcome to Conk News at Night on Blog Talk Radio and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jim Peters, the editor-in-chief of Conk News. People say, "What do you look like, Jim?" I'll tell you what I look like. I look like Steve Bannon if he was really bad looking. That's what I look like. And you think I'm kidding. I'm not. We have a lot to talk about this evening. First of all, we have our guest tonight is Nanette Holt. She's the Florida correspondent for the Epoch Times, an excellent, excellent online newspaper. I point this out in the interview. We've already done it. It's pre-recorded. We don't carry the Epoch Times on Conk News because the entire website, the entire newspaper is behind a paywall. And that and the Wall Street Journal and a couple of the things, there's many, many factors that goes into what news sources we end up carrying on Conk News. It's about 200 of them when you bring all the podcasts in and all the videos and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot. So we don't carry the Epoch Times because basically you can't see it. All the links on Conk News are for stuff that's available on the internet for free. And occasionally, if that gets screwed up, we remove stuff. Like we just removed the Washington Times because too many of their articles were behind the paywall. And that's not what we're about. And nothing against them. They're a fine newspaper, and that's the reason we originally included them. But that was just that's not what we're doing, and so they had to go, unfortunately. So anyway, we're going to be talking to her about the Florida primary that happened last Tuesday. I'd like to thank all of you for all the good wishes about me coming back from COVID. I tested negative, finally, around 2 o'clock Central Time on Thursday, just as the guys were taping the weekend show. And I want to thank Tim Conaway for sitting in for me. That was very kind of him. I'll be perfectly blunt. I haven't heard that show yet, but everybody said it went very well. So thanks to them and Larry Newman and, of course, Don Zorro, who's always here and always in good spirits. We appreciate him. So I want to talk about our radio schedule here, too. Like I said at the top of the show, this show's on Blog Talk Radio, and also it's a podcast. And this is the way this works. I keep having to explain this when we are putting a page up on Conk News to explain it. It should be up in a few days. And that is, we have a radio schedule here. We do 4 original podcasts every week. I do Conk News at Night on Sunday nights and Wednesday nights. Hank Reardon does the Reardon Report on Tuesday afternoons at 3 p.m. Central, and he does that live. So you can call in and talk to him. And he likes that, which is actually the reason we do a live, because he likes to do the live show. He likes it. And then we do the weekend show, which we tape on Thursday afternoon sometime, and we run it for the first time Friday morning on Blog Talk Radio. So we have 4 shows that we run that are new Sunday nights, Tuesday afternoons, Wednesday nights, and Friday morning. That's the schedule. That's the way it works. So now we're also going to be this show, and only this show, Conk News at Night, we're going to be repeating at 11 p.m. on Sunday and Wednesday nights right after we run it at 9 p.m. And the reason is because I have this romantic vision of people curled up in their bed underneath the covers listening to this on their iPhone, and I'm probably completely full of shit. Let's say that's probably happened like 3 times. But at any rate, we might as well. We have the bandwidth, you know. We pay Blog Talk Radio a relatively healthy fee to do this stuff, even though most of our, you know, we're not kidding anybody here. The vast majority of our listenership is through podcasts, and that gets to that, too. We used to, those podcasts I told you on Sunday night, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday night, and Friday morning, We used to post them all at 3 a.m. Central Time the following day. Now we don't do that anymore. Now we post them pretty much a couple hours after they air. Like this show, we're probably going to post at 11 p.m. tonight, assuming you're listening to this on Blog Talk Radio at 9 p.m. So because we came to the conclusion we want these shows to be available for you early the next morning, like 4 or 5 a.m. whenever you wake up. You can turn your little podcast machine on. You can shave and listen to this or shave your legs or whatever. And speaking of which, I was at the local co-op. There's a co-op down the street from here, you know, where all the liberals like to do their shopping and sell stuff. And I swear to God, I saw more unshaven female legs than I've seen in ages. I just want to point that out. You know, it's like, we all need the co-op where we can spend a lot of money buying really weird crap. But I'm married. What can I tell you? So I go there for the special milk. That's why I go. You need the special milk from the special store. But anyway, the reason we're posting this stuff now a couple hours after it airs is because we don't know, we can't control if you're on Podchaser or Apple iTunes or, you know, we're on like 60, 70 different podcast platforms, and pretty much any single one you can think of, we're on there. And we don't know when these people update. That's the thing. So, you know, we were posting at 3 a.m. Central. Well, they might not update that. They might not update their app until 7 a.m. in the morning. And that was not acceptable for us. So now we're running these things pretty much a couple hours after they air. I know that we posted the podcast to the weekend show at 5 p.m. Central on Friday. And it ran on Blog Talk Radio about 3 o'clock. So, any rate, yeah. And the other thing is too, and this is going to be a jam packed show. We got a lot to talk about. And I don't know if it's because I've been gone or just a lot happened this week or whatever. Second part of the program is Nanette Holt. We're going to interview her. Third part of the program is space news, both real space news and the UFO conspiracy news, both. Because I don't know if you know this, we're launching a rocket to the moon tomorrow morning. That would be Monday morning. It's actually scheduled to go off at 8:33 a.m. Central Time, the Artemis 1. We're going to talk about that. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. And so, you know, I don't know if you figured this out, but our schedule on Blog Talk Radio, shows start exactly on time. We delay our shows for 2 minutes because there's a little quirk on Blog Talk Radio. You can't jump into a show right at the starting point. So we have 2 minutes of bumper music that we play so that you can basically jump into the show and hear it from the beginning. But shows on Blog Talk Radio start at exactly on the half hour. However, they can go as long as we want. So there's no ending time. So that's one of the reasons the podcasting is so important to us. We suggest you listen to some podcasts, and you have control over of listening anytime you want. We have two podcast feeds at Conk News. We have the Conk News podcast feed, which includes everything we put out. And then we have the Conk News weekend feed, which is just the weekend show. And if you're as old as I am, you can pretty much, assume that is, like getting your Sunday paper only. So, that's it. You get the weekend feed. It's just a weekend show. The Conk News podcast feed is everything. All four podcasts we do all week. So there's that. Before I go on here, I want to talk about the fact that I had lunch with my friend, Howard, on Friday afternoon, and we had lunch at a place over not far from Broadway and Central here. There's a street in Northeast Minneapolis called Quincy, which is kind of sort of the oldest single street in the entire city. Now, those of you who've never been to Minneapolis, and most of you, even the people who live there, probably don't realize this. Broadway Street, where our offices at the corner of Broadway and Central, there's two prominent buildings here. I'm not going to tell you which one, but we're in the same building that the BuzzFeed guys are in. And, you know, I like to talk about them because they're pussies. That's why. That's why I like to talk about them. The BuzzFeed office here in Minneapolis is not reporters. It's programmers only because they bought a company here in Minneapolis, and that was a holdover. So, anyway, well, we're in the same building as them, as those pussies from BuzzFeed. So my friend Howard and I, we decided we're going to have lunch down Quincy. And Quincy is one block over, and it's kind of sort of the oldest street in the city of Minneapolis. It's basically an enhanced alley is what it is. And it still has the original cobblestone pavement from 150 years ago. It's really, it's actually a mess to drive, totally, but it's very charming. People like it. There's a lot of stuff there. They're putting stuff, more stuff there all the time. So we ate, I'm not going to say the name of it. There's a very prominent taco. It's a basically a taco restaurant. It's not a taco, even a taco stand. And it's there. They have outdoor seating. They have a lot of outdoor seating. It's very popular because the food is both good and relatively cheap. This place is full all the time. So Friday afternoon, Howard and I decide to have lunch there. I meet him for lunch. And first of all, they have a thing on the table that says, if you want to order, you know, take a picture of this QR code. Okay, fine. My friend couldn't figure that out. I did. But then I get to the app, and the app says that I have to register. I have to register on an app to order my dinner, right? Well, bullshit. I'm not going to do this. So I went inside, and I went to the maitre d's station, and I said, look, I want to order. She said, fine, okay, no problem. So she's ordering for me, blah, 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 blah. And they order, and they bring the food out, and the food's tremendous, and it's pretty cheap, except then we notice, it also says on the little placard on our table, it says that 10% will be added to your order so that we can pay our wait staff more. And my friend, who's a CFO of a major corporation, guy's done very well for himself, you know, this pisses him off to no end. Now, it pisses me off to no end, too, but I have a radio show where I can complain about it. He doesn't. He's just livid. He's living. Why? Well, why don't they just raise the prices 10%? That's a good question, Howard. Why don't they do that? Well, here's the reason. They don't do that because they want to make all the youngins, the people under 30 who come to this restaurant, and that's the majority of their audience, they want to make them feel really good about the fact they're eating there. Oh, these people, they're helping out their employees by paying them more. Well, Jesus Christ, what do you think capitalism is all about, huh? I mean, Christ almighty, this is the stupidest thing ever. And here's the thing, they have sucked millions and millions of young people under the age of 30 into the fact that these are good business practices. A, we won't take your order. You got to do it on the freaking app. B, you can't come in and order what we did, but we can't. And C, then we're going to charge an extra 10% because we need to pay our employees more. Why don't you just raise the prices? Why don't you do that? And, of course, it's pointed out in very uncertain terms because in the state of Minnesota, you have to do this. This is not a tip. You want a tip, you have to tip extra. And then, of course, you got your square thing where they turn the screen around and they basically force you to tip, you know? Like, what if you want to tip, like, zero? What if the help is really, really bad, you know? Well, I mean, you can do that, but you got to pick custom and all sorts. It's way more easier to just hit the 15% button and get it over with. So everyone working at this place, I didn't see a single person I thought was over the age of 28. You had a lot of women who have bald, shaven heads. Nothing wrong with that per se. You know, you got a lot of they're all social warriors, and they're all marching off into the distance with their extra 10% that we have no idea if the company's actually paying them the 10% or not. We don't know, and they don't know either. But they sure feel good about themselves, don't they? Christ, this is stupid. Oh, my friend was just livid. He said, "I'm never coming back here," and he said, "I'm never coming back here," even though the food was excellent and cheap. And he's right, it is. Anyway, I have a radio show to bitch about it, and he doesn't. So there's that. So a lot happened in the last week. We had the one-year anniversary of all the deaths in Kabul. We had the Mar-a-Lago affidavit that was released on Friday afternoon, which was... Okay, folks, now you probably heard this. You know, it was almost entirely redacted. It's basically a bunch of pages with black lines through them. Three quarters of it was unreadable. But here's the real amazing thing. And this was covered by the press, but not well, so you probably don't know this. There's an attachment document that explains why they redacted the stuff in the main document. Well, that's pretty much all redacted, too. The explanation for why this document was redacted was also redacted. Yeah, that's good, isn't it? So then we also heard on Friday that Mark Zuckerberg went on Joe Rogan and said that when this whole thing with the Hunter Biden laptop was going down, the FBI personally asked him to kill the story because they said, well, as far as we can tell, it's Russian disinformation. Now, we know for a fact that they knew at that time it wasn't, that it was real, that it was a real story. But they told Facebook that, and Facebook being good citizens, and actually if Facebook were really good citizens, they would actually run the story because that's the job of the press in the United States is to be adversarial. And it seems like everybody in the press, it's up to us at Con News and five other people have forgotten this, that that they would have run it anyway. But they didn't. They just say they thought they would be good citizens and they would acknowledge the FBI's request. And so now it comes out, Gallup poll of a couple days ago, 71% of Democrats, not the public, 71% of Democrats say that if they'd known about the Hunter Biden laptop story, they would not have voted for Joe Biden. Now, you know, we got, and even my friend Howard, he's a Republican, but he's way more moderate than I am at this point, which is surprising considering how we grew up. But, you know, even he will say that you can define it any way you want regarding whether the election was rigged or stolen or cheated or all that sort of stuff. But here's the deal. Even though that was not illegal, that through the 2020 election. There's no doubt about it at this point. The fact that that Facebook and Twitter especially buried the story, and Twitter especially buried it. The New York Post ran the story on their front pages for like 2 weeks, and Twitter wouldn't even allow links to the New York Post stories. They killed those links even, let alone commentary. So basically, if you were on Twitter, you didn't hear about this. And that may not be illegal, but that's morally criminal. It is. It kept people from voting. And this has been my complaint with advanced voting generally. Me, myself, everyone should vote on the same day, period. And if you can't vote on the same day, absolutely ballot, too frickin' bad. Then you don't get to vote. Because people take in information as it comes in. Here in Minnesota, technically, you can vote ahead of time and call your ballot back. But you try doing that. It's like they're gonna go find your ballot among the 32 million people that submitted theirs. Actually, not that many. There's 5 million people in the state of Minnesota. But still, the fact of the matter is hundreds of thousands of people sent in their ballots, and they're going to go find yours. Yeah, tell me about it. Right. For all practical purposes, it's impossible. And we should not have advanced voting of any kind. This is my thing. Everyone votes on the same day. Matter of fact, in a perfect world, everyone would vote on the same hour. But let's just call it a day and leave it at that. So 71% of Democrats said they would not have voted for Joe Biden for president. There you go. Now, like I said, I don't know what you want to call that. You want to call that cheating? You want to call that rigging? You know, I still get back. I can't get past the fact, and this also happened last week, too, again. President gave a speech in Rockville, Maryland, in a high school gym. Didn't fill the gym. The president of the United States could not fill a high school gymnasium. He could not fill it. People did not show up. I've been bitching and moaning about this for 2 years. This is the president, the 46th president of the United States. Nobody comes out to see him for shit. Nobody. He could not fill a high school gymnasium. He's there to talk about his Build Back Better bullshit and this student loan thing, and we got to talk about that for a second, too. But the fact is, this has been going on for 2 years now. No one shows up to see this guy. With one exception, no more than 200 people showed up at any campaign event for Joe Biden during the 2020 election. Exception was 5 days before the election in Pennsylvania, 900 people showed up. That's it. No one showed up for his inaugural. They tried to cover that as a COVID thing. They said, well, we're not going to take tickets. And the reason is because 2 weeks before the inauguration, they had requests for 1,600 tickets. Now, I'm going to point this out again. I'm going to keep talking about this because this drives me nuts. Something's I don't have any proof that there was cheating in the 2020 election, but something sure freaking smells bad. And what smells bad is that, you know, Trump can go on and on about the pissing match about him and Obama and which one of them got more people to the inaugural. They both drew about 100,000 people. For Joe, 2 weeks before the election, they had a request for 1,600 tickets. The maximum number of tickets you could get per request was 4. So therefore, you're talking about a maximum of about 6,000 people. 6,000 people for the president of the United States. He's in Rockville, Maryland last week. He couldn't fill the high school gym. He couldn't fill it. I don't know how many people showed up, but he did not fill it. This is crazy. This crazy old man who lies through his teeth. All right, so let's talk about this whole student debt thing, right? And no one's put it in such stark terms. All right, how much is this costing? According to the Biden administration, $300 billion. There's 330 million people in the United States. So if you break that down per person, every man, woman, child, it's about $950 per person. And get a load of this, folks. I don't think I have to tell you this, too. Only about half of the citizens of the United States any one year pay federal taxes of any kind. So if you take it from that point of view, the number of people who are paying federal taxes, it's about $2,000 per taxpayer for this debacle of getting these oily, slimy, uneducated social justice warrior children, giving them a break. Now, we're going to talk about this in part three of the show. Artemis One is going to launch tomorrow morning. That launch is going to cost the government $9.1 billion, and they're bitching about it. The government is bitching about the fact, why is this costing us too much money to send people on the moon? The whole program is going to be about $500 billion. This is the first launch of at least three. So it's $500 billion. That's $500 billion, those of you who can't do your math. And here we're spending $300 billion on a bunch of entitled children. What a bunch of crap. I'm glad to see this. This is now blowing up in the Democrats' face. There are Democrats who are separating themselves from the passage of this bill. They don't want anything to do with it. It's astonishing. Fox News has been running a montage of commercials from Democrats in the United States basically saying they don't support what the Biden administration is doing. These are Democrats who are advertising to their own districts trying to separate themselves from the president. Because the president is beyond a moron. The president is an asshole. And I've said that before, and I'm going to say it again. And it took who on the Gutfeld show? Tyrus pointed this out. You know, we've got our prognosticator here, Hank Reardon, he's done a really good job of this. He's come up with a very, very interesting take on the Hunter laptop story that we've been trying to propagate here at Claw News, and no one the mainstream press has really bitten on this. But he says that he thinks Hunter Biden taking those laptops to that store was actually an emotional cry for help. And it's hard to argue with that. Not only that, his sister did the same thing with a stupid diary that now they're trying to use to put James O'Keefe, the guy who runs Project Veritas, they're trying to put him in jail because they say he took possession of stolen goods. That's the charge there. Now, whether that laptop was actually stolen, I don't really – or not the laptop, I mean the diary. But the fact is you have two kids in a family who left crucial information in the hands of other people for no apparent reason. No one's ever talked about this. No one actually knows how those laptops were broken. The guy who ran that computer store had no trouble accessing the hard drives, none. So, you know, and same with the diary. Well, the diary was left at a halfway house that she was staying at. I think Hank's right. I think Hank has something going on here, that these are actually cries from help from adult children. And Tyrus said this week on the Gutfeld show on Fox News, and he said, you know, when it comes to politics, when it comes to governing, Joe Biden governs the same way he parents. He's an enabler. That's absolutely true. You know, here, we'll give you – here, kids, have a bunch of money. You know, never mind whether giving them the money is actually a good idea, even for them. You know, what about all the kids who paid their loans off? What about all the adults who paid their children's loans off? What about them? What do they get? Well, they get nothing. This is crap, folks. I can't emphasize this enough. This fall, go vote. Go vote, and I'll be perfectly blunt here. Vote Republican. This is bullshit. The Democrats are run by 20% of their party that are complete stone cold nuts. Now, you know, Bill Maher's he's getting crap from Democrats because he goes on his television show and he calls them out. And even Rachel Maddow, who I have if I were to debate her, we would have a lot of differences. But the thing is, she's not crazy. And Maher is not crazy. And there's a whole bunch of Democrats, the majority of them in America, who aren't crazy. We may, as conservatives, disagree with them, but they're not crazy. But they've turned the public, the entire party, over to the 20% of the party membership that's stone cold nuts. Ilhan Omar represents the district I'm sitting in this very second. Ilhan Omar's crazy. She's a lunatic. She has no business running the government. She couldn't run an Arby's, let alone the United States government. I mean, we're electing people that are stone cold nuts. This has to stop. People in America who have gravitated toward American politics in America who are generally losers. They can't do anything else. I've said this before, and I can't remember if we actually have this up in the Conk store or not, and that because we've been mean to put it up. And my quote on this is that if you can't do, you teach. If you can't teach, you teach gym. And if you can't teach gym, you go into politics. That's pretty much the pecking order. Most people going to politics in America can't do anything else. So we're stuck with losers by and large. But maybe we shouldn't be. Maybe we shouldn't tolerate this crap. And the first thing we shouldn't tolerate is crazy people. You know, and the thing is, if you listen to the left, all the crazy people are on the right, and they're completely wrong. You know, I can go off and I can talk another half an hour on white supremacy, but I'll leave you with this for this part of the show. I don't have here at Kong News, I'm the editor-in-chief, but I don't have the manpower to do this sort of thing. But Bill O'Reilly does. He's getting paid real money over there. So he had his staff look at statistics for 2019, early statistics they could get. How many people in America, both on federal, state, and local level, were arrested for white supremacy hate crimes? Answer, 106. 106. In Charlottesville, everyone forgets this. Everyone talks about the debacle that was Charlottesville, where that woman got killed, she got ran over by a car, blah, blah, blah. That whole thing was there to announce a white supremacy rally that was going to take place later in Washington, D.C. That rally took place. Do you know how many people showed up? 40. That's the thing. And, you know, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. This is where the Democrats are on this. It's not exactly a lie. White supremacy in the United States does exist. But there's very, very few of them. Meanwhile, we have actual crazy people on the left who are actually in government. There's no, you know, there have been crazy people on the right in government in the past. I got to admit, right now, I can't name one. You know, they would tell you Marjorie Taylor Greene or Laura Boebert or whatever. No, those people aren't crazy. Not at all. They're not the least bit crazy. Ilhan Omar, AOC, Cori Bush, they're nuts. They're freaking nuts. Vote against them. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, Nanette Holt from the Epoch Times is going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking about the primary that happened in Florida. She's a Florida correspondent for the Epoch Times. We'll be back in just a minute, everybody. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Kong News at Night. I'm Jim Peters, editor-in-chief of Kong News. I make my mother very proud. Part 2. We have on the line here Nanette Holt. She's the Florida correspondent for the Epoch Times, a fine, fine newspaper. Just want to point out, we do not carry the Epoch Times on the Conk News news aggregation because it's entirely behind a paywall, and sometimes you have to do that to pay for good journalism, don't you, Nanette?
That is true, and I'm so happy to be with you today.
Hey, all right, so I got your PR person sent over a little biography, and apparently, first of all, do you live in Georgia or Florida?
I'm in Florida.
And may I ask, where are you right now, the very second?
We live north of Gainesville, the blue dot in the middle of Florida. I'm currently sitting out on the farm, and you may hear horses whinnying in the background.
She says you have a lot of animals.
We do. At any moment, the dogs may break out in a fight. They like to do that when I'm on the phone.
At least they're not husbands.
Yeah, true. No, he's peaceful.
Oh, my God. All right, so, Nanette, you cover Florida for the Epoch Times. Tell me about the Tuesday primaries. First of all, before you even do that, I got a general question. I'm fairly familiar with Florida. I went to school at the University of Miami. Tell me something about Florida politics I don't know.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, something you don't know. If you go to Charlie Crist's website, Charlie Crist is the new nominee, the Democratic nominee, to take on our governor, Republican Ron DeSantis. If you look at his website, you might not realize that he's been around in Florida politics for a long, long time, but he doesn't always like to broadcast that. That's something that other people have to bring up because he's a Democrat now, but he was a Republican governor of Florida and also was an independent between being a Republican and becoming a Democrat. He was an independent, and he's run for office as all three with all three party affiliations. So I don't know if you knew that, but
yeah, I did. Fun fact. I did, Nanette, but tell me, how and when did he make that switch? Do you know anything about his internal mechanisms for that, or is this simply politics? Or?
Well, you know, it's funny. He was, like I said, a Republican governor 2007 to 2011, and most governors, when they're doing well, they want to stick around, try to be a second-term governor, but he said, no, I'm going to run for Senate. So as a Republican, he decided to pass up running for that second term as governor, ran for Senate, but then Marco Rubio looked like he might win the primary for the Republicans. So when Charlie Crist was trailing, he said, oop, let me change my party affiliation. Let me run as an independent and skip the primary. So that immediately put him into the general election. Marco Rubio did win as projected, and then Marco Rubio beat him in the general election.
So are we just talking about slimy politicians here? Is there any philosophical basis for any of this?
Well, I don't know what's in his head, but his policies have and his positions on issues have changed quite dramatically. And, you know, sometimes people change as you come to certain realizations, but he used to be a pro-choice, pro-law and order, pro-Second Amendment type of guy, and now he is completely opposite, and he got beaten up pretty badly in the primary campaign by his top opponent, Nikki Fried, but he pretty much wiped the floor with her.
Yeah.
He didn't really get a lot of traction with the Democrats because I think they felt like he was the only one with enough name recognition to possibly take on Ron DeSantis.
Right, he got 60% of the vote, or 59.7. I'm looking at the stat here right now. But
And it was interesting, though. I got to say, I went into that primary a little concerned that I needed to write two possible results stories so we could move quickly. We kind of do those things in advance. We make a prediction, we write it, and then we adjust it as the race is being called. And I actually was persuaded that Nikki Fried had a shot because we had a pretty good polling mechanism coming out of the University of Florida that's usually pretty reliable. And they said Nikki Fried had surpassed him and she was going to beat him. Of course, she didn't. It wasn't even close. But it's a really interesting trend I've noticed that people are lying to pollsters these days. They're not giving the truth about how they plan to vote, and they're affecting things dramatically.
Nanette, let's talk about that. Are people lying to pollsters, or are the pollsters lying to us? I mean, I can't figure this out.
It depends on who hires the pollster. That was actually a pretty reliable poll that came out. I mean, it's been a reliable University of North Florida Polling Center. I can't remember the exact name of it. It's reliable. Now, these polls that the candidates hire, the way the questions are worded is, you know, designed to give them the outcome that they want. And they usually release those polls when they're behind. But that one was a pretty respected polling outfit. I have heard on the ground many people tell me that their strategy that they have spread throughout their supporting, you know, their groups of supporters is lie to the pollsters.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
This is all I know is that there were polls for years and years that were more or less accurate, and starting around 6 or 7 years ago, now the other than a couple exceptions, and off the top of my head, it would be Rasmussen and Trafalgar. They're almost all skewed, I haven't been able to figure out if the pollsters are doing the skewing themselves or the public is lying to the pollsters. I haven't been able to figure it out. You think it's the latter?
Well,
huh?
You know. A lot of these pollsters are for hire by candidates, and, you know, candidates use the polls to sway voters. They release these results that artificially show them ahead, and they try to build momentum that way. But, you know, again, there are independent pollsters that should be pretty reliable. They shouldn't be skewing things. They should be really checking those questions to be sure there's no inherent bias, and they're coming up with wrong polls. So I've got to lay that one at the feet of the voters who are answering the phones.
Huh. Interesting. Well, the other thing is cell phones have completely screwed the whole process up. I mean, most people don't have landlines anymore, you know, and they're not used to calling cell phones. And I think in some places it's illegal. And so, you know, it's like there's all that crap too. So I don't know.
Well, you know, kind of an interesting thing is the way the geo-tracking plays into this now. If you have the money and you want to do a poll, you can, and you want to, you know, you want to reflect what very conservative voters would tell you in your poll, because that would benefit you. You pay for the geo-tracking, say you find out where your most conservative churches are, and you buy the cell phone numbers of the people who were at the most conservative churches in your area at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. That will give you people who will answer predictably for the most part. And that's how they find the cell phones that will have people answering and giving them the answers they want.
I can spouse for this myself here at Klong News. We do our advertising the same way. That's how, you know, because we're a conservative publication. We're wasting our money advertising to liberals. So yeah, no, we do the exact same thing. It's like that's how we find our advertising audience. So yeah, it's both mind numbingly annoying and also effective. You know, what do you say? I don't know. You know,
well,
hey.
Yeah, and you know that's exactly the technology that the 2000 Mules movie highlighted. True the Vote went through, and you know it's very expensive and very time consuming to connect all the dots. But that's what True the Vote did to lay out the case that there had been ballot mules all through these questionable areas in the 2020 election, where the voting seemed to be suggesting there was great fraud.
And people who haven't seen that movie, they bought a shitload of data. That's the other thing. It was like a trillion hits or something like that. It was unbelievable how they spent all the time culling through all the stuff. I mean, it's quite an achievement, actually, you know?
Yeah, everybody should watch that movie. Doesn't matter how you feel about that election. You need to understand that your data is for sale.
Yeah.
And this is how it can be used. So.
Hey, so, Nanette, does Chris have a chance in hell in the general?
You know, the top political forecasters say that Ron DeSantis is very likely to hold on to his job, but he is not what they would call a sure bet. There are different rankings on how these forecasters consider the races to be predicted, and they don't say he's what they call safe or solid. It could be a race. You know, there's a lot of time between now and November, politically speaking.
Yes.
And you know, Charlie Crist had a very unusual, you can maybe hear the smile in my voice, he had a very unusual way of campaigning at his very first press conference right out of the gate as the nominee on Wednesday morning. He came out swinging and told Floridians, if you support Ron DeSantis, if you like him, keep your vote. I don't want your vote.
Yeah.
because you have hate in your heart. And I thought, wow, I've never heard somebody say don't vote for me.
So Nanette, tell me, was that impulsive or was that a planned procedural move? I can't figure that out.
I can't think of any time I felt like Charlie Crist had not prepared what he was going to say.
Yeah.
I feel like they, you know, this whole campaign of his is I'm the kinder, gentler, unifying, loving, compassionate, sweet candidate. We don't want the DeSantis rhetoric. But when I talk to people in Florida, and I try to talk to both sides of these issues, because that's the only way I can do my job. I need to present both sides. Everyone I talk to says, we really like the freedom we have here.
Well, yeah. In
Florida.
Duh. I mean, Florida's basically the only real state that handled the pandemic correctly. I mean, you know, for all practical purposes. I could name a few more, but, you know, they're definitely in the top five, you know.
Well, our kids got back in school in August of 2020. They had the option of going back. So, yeah, DeSantis pulled the masks off the kids. They weren't allowed to be forced masks. So we're not seeing a lot of the same problems with our school children that, you know, people in other areas are seeing. It's kind of hard to remember that we used to be locked down here in Florida.
Yeah.
I was somewhere today where people were requiring masks in a medical office.
But I have Nanette, I have to tell you, I've been we've been running this website for a year and a half. But the year before that, in April and May of 20, I did test shows for this show. So we did about 8 weeks of test shows, and that was exactly when the pandemic was starting. So I started to follow the data even then, and even in May of 20, it became obvious that children weren't really affected by this. And so 2 years go by, and all these kids have to wear these stupid masks in school, and they're all getting bummed out and depressed, and they can't recognize each other, and it was all completely pointless. And now everyone says, oh my God, it was pointless. Well, duh. I mean, it's like, how come people can't figure this shit out?
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's funny because in Florida, we did have, I don't know, 7 or 8 rogue school boards who thumbed their nose at DeSantis. And when he said, you can't keep the kids masked anymore, they said, no, we're going to require it anyway. And there was this back and forth with, you know, fines and I'm going to not send you state money. And they said, well, go ahead. We don't care. And all this stuff going back and forth. And so he got involved in school board races and started endorsing candidates. Now, conservative candidates who were in blue counties, like the one I'm in, they preferred not to have his endorsement. But candidates in other counties really were excited about getting his endorsement. Governors usually don't give endorsements for school board candidates. That's supposed to be a nonpartisan race.
Yeah.
But they could fill out applications, send them to his office. And if he endorsed you, you got a ton of money for, they put out advertising pieces promoting you, and 25 of 30 got onto school boards. And people like what he did for education in the past couple of years. I mean, he has strengthened parents' rights. He has kicked a lot of things out of the schools that most parents don't want in the schools, like woke ideology, CRT teaching. They liked that the kids could go back to class. They liked that the kids couldn't be forced to wear masks. I mean, parents really like what he's done. And I see a lot of people who have been diehard Democrat voters say, you know, the way my kid has been treated has changed me. And I'm a DeSantis supporter.
There's no doubt about that. There have been very diehard Democrats who have finally kind of thrown their hands up. It's like, it's really amazing. So you've been doing this for a while, Nanette. So tell me, your observation on like people controlling other people. This whole thing about the mask issue. All right, so you have a bunch of technical data that says these masks aren't helping, and yet you have a bunch of politicians saying we're going to force you to put the masks on. What's going on there? What is it with do people just have an inherent desire to control other people? Do you have any, after watching this for so long, any thoughts on this at all?
Well, I do. I hear this theory put forth that this is an attempt at a Marxist coup in our country. And I've got to say, if you look back on history and you look at how these things are, how they are put into place, it really seems to be a march towards Marxism. And, you know, you have to control people. You have to condition people to be controlled. And I think we're seeing that. I think we're seeing people willingly give up their freedom and say, I want the government to think for me. And, you know, it's been pretty effective in some areas. I happen to live in a very blue county, and people do what they're told. And you find more people masked here still than you would find anywhere else in Florida. Very interesting.
It's amazing. I have no idea why people want to be told what to do. I can't, as a libertarian, I can't, you know, wrap my mind around it at all. I just can't. But whatever.
Well, it's kind of intellectually exhausting, though, to have to think for yourself. You know, you can just play Candy Crush and be told what to do, and then you're not responsible for the way anything goes down. You know?
Well, yeah, you have a point there. That's true. That's very true. Hey, let me ask you. So do you think, is DeSantis going to run for president?
You know, people really ask me that a lot. And I've just got to say, I think it's very likely that he will. He certainly has not given big clues. I did notice the change in the way he spoke at one point and started feeling like maybe it was kind of a campaign for president. Some of the political analysts who watch him very closely feel like a lot of his speeches aren't just a re-election bid, but he's really teeing up for a presidential run. I do, just my heart of hearts, I do think that his wife's health will play a major role in that decision.
And what's the status of that right now?
She is, as far as I know, you know, the most recent report we have is she's cancer-free, has remained cancer-free. She's a young woman, had breast cancer. They weren't sure very quickly what her prognosis was going to be. They have three young children. The oldest is 5. So as devoted as he is to his family, I think if her health were to be in question, he would not run in 2024. However, she is a master of being part of that media machine that he has. They're very skilled. And I'm not saying they're not genuine. I do think they're very genuine people, but she's good. She's a former anchor woman. She knows how to deliver a message. People love her. And she's very much a part of his campaign right now. And, you know, if he runs for president, it's going to be hard to stop him. He's going to steamroll any other Republican nominee, with the exception of possibly Donald Trump. We don't know if he's running, but there have been all kinds of polls about how Republican voters feel. There's been an uptick of how they feel about Trump actually since this Mar-a-Lago raid.
Yeah.
But when you put Trump up against any potential other Republican candidate for 2024, he dominates by a long way. If you remove him from that, you know, field of candidates, Ron DeSantis just runs off with it.
Right. That's right. Now, and we have a whole bunch of prognosticators here in the office, and we are truly stacked with Donald Trump fans, but there's many people here who don't think Trump should run for all sorts of various reasons, you know, even the people who like him. Do you think, would DeSantis run as Trump's VP? Do you think that's a possibility?
One of them would have to leave the state. There's a little sticky point in our Constitution that says you can't have the president and the vice president from the same state. So, you know, as governor, he lives here. Former President Trump lived here, so one of them would have to go. Wouldn't be a big trick for Donald Trump to move back to New York.
No,
would he do it? I don't know if he would, but they, I mean, I could see that being a ticket. I could see that being a very strong ticket, but like I said, one of them's got to get out of Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing about, you know, so we have another, a radio commentator here, Hank Reardon, and Hank and I have been going back and forth about this because Hank's a huge Trump fan, but he's not think Trump should run again. And for a while, Hank had me talked into his logic, but I'm starting to see it the other way, because when you think about Trump, if Trump were to re-win the presidency, he will be a lame duck on the first day, his first day in office. We will know exactly how long he's going to be there, and it's only going to be 4 years. It's an unusual situation, and for him to tee up somebody else, I mean, DeSantis is his obvious successor, you know. So under normal circumstances, I'd say that probably isn't a very good idea, but this isn't normal stuff, so I don't know, you know.
You know, the one thing I hear some people say about Donald Trump, even people who love him, feel like his policies put us in a really great spot as a country, and mourn his loss or whatever it was in 2020. A lot of them have told me they hope he does not run, because they feel like President Joe Biden's performance as president has scared a lot of people about the age of someone taking the office of president.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard some people say, you know, I mean, there's still 2 more years. He's an older guy. What if he starts slipping?
Right.
Do we want to risk that again?
Yeah. There's also just the fact too, maybe his time has just passed. There's that also, you know, I mean, that's hard to gauge stuff like that, but yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons you want to want Trump to run. So I don't know.
He's clearly a kingmaker for sure.
Yes.
Clearly. And he could remain in that role until he's 120 years old. But
yeah,
Ron DeSantis is also becoming a kingmaker.
Yeah,
of his own right. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I do think there's a lot of time though between now and 2024. So I imagine we're certainly not going to hear Ron DeSantis say anything about the presidency until maybe early 2023.
Yeah. I'm looking at the primary results here from Florida. Are there going to be any surprises here in November? I mean, I'm assuming Rubio is going to win again. Tell me about Rebecca Jones. Yeah, before we go here.
That is not a race I'm following, but I will tell you, Rubio could be in trouble, I think.
Really?
I really do. And here's why. Because it's expensive to campaign in Florida. We've got a very expensive media market, and Val Demings is raising money in just astronomical amounts. It's going to be hard for Rubio to compete with that. And, you know, she's going to get a lot of money in from out of state. There's a lot at stake. You know, the control of the Senate is at stake. We just are going to see her pound him with a media buy that he can't possibly match.
Interesting.
Huh. And, you know, when you control the airwaves, you control a lot of how that thing goes. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, we just need a bunch of UFOs to land and just solve all the problems.
I'm up for that.
No, see, Nanette, you've never heard this show before. Part 3 is on paranormal news. So it's like,
I'm up for it. Let me tell you, I'm ready for a solution. If it comes from outer space, so be it.
Well, we'll have you on again to talk about a different subject. How's that sound?
That sounds terrific. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Hey, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you, too. I hope we do this again. I appreciate your insight. Thanks so much. You take care, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Nanette Holt from the Epoch Times, a fine, fine newspaper. Like I said, we don't carry the Epoch Times on Kong News because the whole paper's behind a paywall. But if you want to pay for some good journalism, I can't recommend that more highly enough from the Epoch Times. She lives in Florida, and she covers the Florida beat for them for politics. So we're going to take another commercial break here. And yeah, no, it's true. You know, part 3 of the show is UFO news, and we have some this week. So stay tuned, everybody. Part 3 of Kong News at Night. I'm Jim Peters, the editor-in-chief of Kong News, and I thank Nanette Holt from the Epoch Times for joining us there. Very nice conversation we had. She's got a lot of barnyard animals, apparently. The ranch, I guess. So, part 3 of the show is usually paranormal news. Today we have paranormal news and real news, and we're going to start with the real news, and the real news is space. We're talking about space tomorrow morning, if you're listening to this on Sunday night at Blog Talk Radio. But tomorrow morning, Monday, the 29th, at 8:33 a.m. Central Time, NASA is going to launch the Artemis 1 spacecraft that's going to go to the moon and come back. Now, it's going to be unmanned, and they're not landing on the moon. So they're going to take this giant, giant rocket. It's the most powerful rocket ever built. It's not quite as big as the Saturn V rockets from 50 years ago, but it's more powerful than them. And they're going to the whole thing is going to be done by remote control. They're going to kind of sort of do a dress rehearsal of this moon landing that they're going to do in 2023, I guess. No, 24. Oh, it's shit. Who knows? It's like, you know, it's like, okay. So the thing is, so right. So they're going up into Earth orbit. They're going to take their Orion spacecraft and they're going to launch it toward the moon. They're going to put it in a really tight orbit around the moon, 60 miles, I guess. And then it's going to be 40,000 miles. It's going to be the farthest any human designed, how do they put it? Human enabled capsule has ever been from the Earth. That's the way a human enabled, because eventually there will be humans on it. It's riding with four test dummies, and they're monitoring those dummies like they would be monitoring real people. Of course, everything's controlled from the ground. They're not actually landing on the moon. They're not going to do that. This is the Artemis 1. Artemis 2 is going to be the same flight with people sitting in the chairs. You're going to have real astronauts in that one. Unlike the Apollo spacecraft, the Orion holds four astronauts, not three. So they're going to go to the moon with four astronauts, and they're going to do the same thing. It's going to be a drive-by. They're not going to land. And then that's going to be next year, 2023. And then the year after that, 2024, I guess, what's planned right now, then they're going to land on the moon. That would be Artemis 3. Now, I have to mention this because everyone's, well, how come we haven't gone to the moon in 50 years? Well, here's the deal, folks. There's a lot of people who think we have. There's a lot of people who think the military does it regularly. And the thing about that is you say, well, how can they launch a rocket that big and nobody notices? Well, they're launching rockets all the time. I mean, there's basically a backlog of Cape Canaveral of launches between SpaceX, Blue Origin, the military. They're always launching rockets. Who the hell knows what's going up there? You know, and the thing is, and like we know for a fact that the intelligence community in the United States launches rockets because they're all classified. And, I mean, they will actually say on the schedule, classified launch. They can't, NASA can't tell people what it is. So we know they're sending stuff up. The question is, have they been sending people to the moon? I would be shocked if they weren't, if only because, well, here's the deal, folks. The moon by treaty is considered a neutral territory. In other words, no one on Earth by UN treaty is allowed to militarize the moon. But that's, you know, by treaty, that's allowed, and everyone thinks, well, that's just bullshit that the Chinese are already doing it. The Russians probably not, because the Russians can't get their shit together enough to do this shit, even though there's a good possibility we're using Russian rockets to actually get there. Believe it or not, that's true, because so far the Russians have been doing most of the launches by contract for the Americans, up to the space station, all sorts of places. They have their technology is old, but extremely reliable, and it works. So, but we know the Chinese, now they have publicly, they are going to the moon without people, without astronauts. They send a whole bunch of remote shit up there. But there's been rumors for years that they've been sending military personnel to the moon. And it would not surprise me if this turns out to be true. We'll probably never know. But the thing is, if they're doing it, we're definitely doing it. Okay? So, you know, because the thing is, why would we stop going to the moon? Well, the argument was we exhausted all the scientific research that needed to be done at that time or could be done under those circumstances. That's the argument. I don't know if that's true. I do know this, and this is beyond dispute. This is verifiable. And that is, there have been pictures taken, not even of the dark side of the moon, pictures taken on the light side of the moon where we have seen all sorts of weird crap. Like there's some huge tower that's a mile high. You know, it's like this stuff is plainly, obviously not natural. And these pictures have come back regularly. So, you know, okay, so yeah, maybe they're the ETs, maybe not, but maybe they're us too, because we know we can do this. I mean, this is the thing. This Artemis 1 launch we're sending to the moon is the first time Americans have sent anything to the moon that's human-enabled. In other words, that a human could ride in, even though the humans are not riding in 50 years. It's I mean, come on, 50 years? You know? The whole thing's messed up is what it is. So, and then they're also bitching about the money. And I brought this up in part one of the show. So this student loan debt forgiveness thing supposedly is going to cost the American government $300 billion. CBO, Congressional Budget Office, has apparently put the price up to $500 billion. That, for those of you who don't do math easily, is $500 billion. But as I pointed out, $300 billion is pretty much $1,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Not quite, about $950 for every single person. And we're running $30 trillion in debt. So NASA's bitching and moaning about the fact that it's going to cost them, this launch is going to cost them $9.1 billion. Geez, you could do a lot of those launches if you hadn't paid all those damn entitled kids back, huh? I mean, did that occur to anybody? Apparently not. Apparently it didn't, because no one in the American government can do math, apparently. This is the way this works. So I'm watching the Gutfeld show, which I like to watch at night, and he had guest hosts on all weekend. I can't remember. I think this was when Dana Perino was hosting. She had one of the guest panelists was Jonathan Morris. Now, Jonathan Morris is a former Catholic priest. He's not talked about why he got out of the priesthood. For years, he appeared on Fox News as a Catholic priest, and then he left the priesthood. It might be for love. He's now married, and if I'm right, I think he's married to a man, and they have children, if I'm correct. And, you know, it's like I don't know if you folks know this. The Catholic Church does not look upon that fairly healthily about marrying men. But it's in the law in the United States, and he did it, and God bless him. He's raising a family, and apparently he's very happy. And now he's kind of sort of an executive life coach is what he does. But he went on and on about this the entire show, and he's right. We need people in government in America that we can trust. We can't trust any of these bozos. And the irony is, Trump, the most hated guy in America, who everyone said nobody can trust Trump, Trump, we could trust. That's the irony of this. Trump got the job done. Jared Kushner was on Fox News this morning. It's Sunday night, so I'm talking about Sunday morning. I'm pushing his new book, and he said this, and it's really true. If Trump is reelected, Trump will probably fix all this stuff very quickly, because in the 4 years he was in office, he learned how to govern. Yeah, even Kushner said the first year or two were pretty rough. And then you stop and think about this, about that the entire time he was working under the pressure and the thumb about the fact that he was colluding with the Russians. The entire 4 years. And he still got a shitload of stuff done. We could trust Trump. And people find this unbelievable. I mean, the people on the left, there's a whole bunch of people in the country, at least a third of the country, if not 40%, who irrationally hate Trump's guts. They don't know why. I have Republican friends who hate Trump's guts. They hate him. And they'll totally acknowledge that the policies were good and that he did a good job. They still hate him. So we have the space agency now, they're having to crimp pennies because they can't afford a $9.1 billion launch to the moon. $9.1 billion. So let me see. If I'm going to do some even adjusted for inflation, for the amount of money they spent on bailing out those stupid entitled kids, they could have done 30 launches. 30. And we want to go to Mars, too. And we should, because it's the human destiny to go out into space. It just is. Now, speaking of that, okay, I just made myself a great segue here. So what else is in the space news? I'll tell you what else is in the space news. Buried in either the student debt bill or the Build Back Better light bill, I can't remember which it was, and the thing is, I can't even quote what was actually said here because it's so legalese that I can't even wrap my mind around it. Anyway, in one of the bills, there's buried in there a provision to fund UFO research for Congress. And it's written in such obtuse language that basically you, if, unless you know the code, you can't figure this out. Matter of fact, even the name of the committee is buried in this proclamation. It's not, you know, I don't know what they're calling it. But Congress wants to know about UFOs. And here's the deal. The Pentagon is dragging its feet. And people in Congress are bitching about this. The Pentagon does not want to turn over what they know about UFOs. I'm going to tell you why they don't want to turn it over. Because they know the UFOs are not from this earth. They know that. Even if they haven't made contact with extraterrestrials, I have no idea if they have or not. I mean, you can go back, you know, there's people who said that in 1953, Eisenhower met with the ETs. And not only that, Laura Eisenhower, his great-granddaughter, she says that that's true. Even though there's no lore in their family, there's no family lore that points to this. She says through her own independent research, she's determined that her dad, her great-great-grandfather actually did do this, actually met with ETs on Montauk Field, actually two different types. Apparently it was both the Nordics and the Greys. And the Nordics told this was apparently the deal. The Nordics told the Americans, we will give you access to all our technology if you completely kill nuclear weapons. And Eisenhower decided he could not do that. And under the circumstances of the time, I understand. So then the Greys came along and said, look, we'll give you access to some of our technology if you let us abduct a certain number of your citizens every year, and we promise we won't harm them, we'll wipe their memories and return them the way they were. That was supposedly the deal. Now, Eisenhower's got a lot of shit for apparently agreeing to this, but you look at this way. You don't have a choice. You're dealing with people who have really running circles around us in the technology aspect, and this is in 1953. We didn't know shit. I could still make an argument we barely know shit. In 1953. So the thing is, if you don't agree, they're going to do it anyway. It's like, you know, you might as well get something out of it. And this is where I if this happened, I'm defending Eisenhower's point of view here. And that is, first of all, he could not get rid of nuclear weapons. We would have gotten killed, creamed by the Soviets. There's no doubt about that. And secondly, yeah, you're going to agree to this agreement because you don't have a choice. Got that? You understand where I'm coming from here? They're going to take the people anyway. And not only that, apparently, supposedly, for people who are familiar with this, you know, this is all rumor and speculation. But like I said, Laura Eisenhower herself says this is more or less true. She said she has verified this through her own independent research. But even if you don't, even if you go along with it, supposedly they broke the agreement anyway. They took way more people. They've been abducting way more people than they said they were going to. And we don't know worldwide, doing the math, it appears about 2% of the world population has been abducted. That's millions and millions of people. And you're saying, well, Jim, how could they do that? They don't have that many people coming to Earth in spaceships doing that. Yeah, they do, folks. They do. They don't have – here's the deal. They don't have anything else to do. You know, if your technology is a million years ahead of us – and let me give you an example on this too. I've been watching the show The Orville. I'm kind of Seth MacFarlane's knockoff of Star Trek. And in the last episode of this last season, which may be the last episode of the series, they don't really know yet, it was a good way to wrap it up too. They're explaining to a woman from another planet what happened on Earth. And what the explanation is, we finally came up with atomic replicators, which they have on their ship, and which, like in Star Trek, The Next Generation, Picard orders his Earl Grey tea from. Those two stupid machines, they're about the size of a microwave oven. You tell it what you want, and it literally constructs it in real time before your eyes. Now, we're going to have those. Those are going to exist. They're essentially atomic 3D printers is what they are. They will take a bunch of crap, literally dirt, useless atomic molecules, trash, whatever you want to put into it, and turn it into whatever you want. This is going to happen. I'm guessing maybe 200 years. I'm not going to live to see this. You probably won't either, but it's going to happen in the next 200 to 500 years. And when that happens, as Kelly, the first officer of the Orville, was explaining to this woman, When this happens, it will completely upend human society because there will be no want anymore. Because basically anything anybody wants is now going to be more or less free. All it takes is you have energy to do this. And I said this on a previous broadcast. We're already knocking down the barriers to nuclear fusion. We are probably going to have commercial nuclear fusion in the United States in the next 50 years. I'm 66, so I don't know if I'll live to see that. My mother's 98. Her mom lives to 104. I got it going on my side. And not only that, we're probably going to come up. This is the weird part for my generation, the baby boomers. We might end up getting screwed because there's probably going to be great strides made in the next 20 years on human longevity, but we might be too old to actually benefit from it. So, but I've told like my nieces and nephews, I've told them you're going to live to be 120. Not only that, you're going to be healthy the entire time. And that's going to happen. That will happen to them. Me, I don't know. I'm probably going to miss it. And those of you old codgers listening to this, you're probably going to miss it too. But anyway, the point is, this will fundamentally change society because for all practical purposes, it will completely eliminate want. If you want a new color TV, you go to your machine in the den and you say, make me a new color TV, and it will make you a new color TV. If you need a new car, you go down to the local, what used to be the local junkyard, not anymore. Now it's the atomic replicator yard where there's one of these giant machines, and you put in your order for a new car, and it makes you a new car. And you don't have to pay anything because it doesn't cost anything. You're literally just really rearranging atoms. That's what you're doing. So there's a pattern for everything. I mean, it's been explained to me now that even like the stupid Earl Grey tea thing that Picard did on Star Trek, just the pattern alone for that would take up quintuplets quintobytes of information. I mean, right now it would completely exhaust even the most powerful computer we have on Earth in terms of memory. But we're going to be dealing with quantum memory very shortly. And quantum memory, you're going to be able to stick all the data on the planet in something the size of a sugar cube. That's going to happen in the next 5 years, folks. That's all. We're already on the way to that. So yeah. So I mean, and so then you talking about these people, their Green New Deal bullshit. I'll tell you what bullshit. This thing with the nuclear fusion is going to solve all those problems. And it's going to happen, no doubt about it. So what happened a couple weeks ago is there's two hurdles to commercial nuclear fusion. One is sustaining the reaction. We've always been able to make the fusion reactions. They haven't been self-sustaining. For the first time ever, they made one that sustained itself. Now, they've had a hard time replicating that, but they did do it. So they've confirmed that. And the second thing is making more power than it takes to run the reaction. And we're almost at the point where we can do that. And so, yeah, this stuff's going to happen, folks. Getting back to the thing here about the fact that why the Pentagon is dragging their feet on this, they know where these things are from. Like I said, I can't venture beyond that. A lot of people have. Laura Eisenhower says she knows for sure. It's her granddad, great granddad, you know, whatever. There's a lot of people have speculated, but there's one thing we know, and that is these things are not from Earth, and no one wants to say it. That's the problem. No one actually wants to say it. And I'm going to leave you with this, and this is kind of important. There's a reason the military doesn't want to say it, because in the terms of covering this up, now we know, how do I know this is a cover up? I'll tell you how I know. This is really interesting. People in America are sworn to silence, and it's a hard silence, man. Supposedly, the UFO question has been the single most secret thing in the American government for the last 70 years. No, let me rephrase that. In the American military, the government truly doesn't know. The senators and congressmen truly don't know. There's been some inklings that a few presidents have been let in on this, but not all of them. But the military, they know. And the reason we know about all this stuff is, believe it or not, our friends are Canadians. The Canadians are not sworn to U.S. military secrets. And the U.S. military and the Canadian military communicate regularly. And this is how Paul Hellnier, who was a former defense minister of Canada. He died a couple of years ago, but he went on the record the last 10 years of life telling anybody who would listen to the fact that he said the Americans have had contact with the ETs. He said that. And he said he knew because secrets were shared with the Canadians from the American side, and the Canadians are not bound by secrecy agreements. They aren't. So they can talk, and that's why we know about this stuff. That's the primary reason. So I'll tell you something else, too. And you know, about this thing on December 2017, the New York Times wrote, you know, all these videos about all these ET spacecraft, all this sort of stuff. This is from 1953. This is the same year that supposedly Eisenhower did this. Nathan Twining is a brigadier general in the United States. It was not the Air Force at that time. Or no, actually it was. It was the Air Force. It was the Air Force because that was 47. So he got tired of hearing of all these pilots talking about all these strange shit they were seeing flying around. He said, somebody write me a report. And they did. Somebody in the Air Force prepared a report for Twining, and the report said thus, two things. One, these things are real. They're not figments of people's imagination. They're not mirages. They're not swamp gas. These are real flying machines flying around in our airspace, and two, we don't know who built them. That's what they told Nathan Quine. Now, here's the amazing thing. That was 70 years ago, and the shit that came out from the Congress this last summer said exactly the same thing. In other words, we've made no progress on this issue in 70 goddamn years. We haven't. So I can't tell you, like, if we're talking to ETs, I don't know any of that shit, but I do know this. Those things are real, and they're not from this world. And we know that, and nobody wants to say it, because if somebody says it, there's a possibility a whole bunch of people in the U.S. military might go to jail. That's the actual reason nobody wants to say it. So the military's been looking to push this announcement off to either NASA or Congress, one or the other. It's a crazy world, folks. We're going to take one more break here, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Stay tuned, please. You're listening to Conk News at Night on Blog Talk Radio and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jim Peters. I'm the editor-in-chief of Conk News. I love doing this show. And we're finally getting up to speed here. We're going to have guests. Now, we have a guest on Wednesday. We have a guest booked on Wednesday, too. Dr. Murray Sidran is his name. And he's like the libertarian extraordinaire of the U.S. And he's going to explain to us why libertarianism might be the only single factor that gets us out of our current political quandary. And that's going to be really interesting because I'm a libertarian by nature, and yet the large capital L libertarians who run the Libertarian Party in the United States, they're nuts. They're crazy. So something's got to give here, and I'm really interested in talking to him. We have not taped this interview yet. So he's going to be on Wednesday. And then other than that, it's going to be the regular news. We're repeating this show at 11 p.m. Central Time on Sunday night now, and also Wednesday at 11 p.m. Central. Hank does his show at 3 p.m. Central on Tuesdays, and we repeat that all Wednesdays and at 3 p.m. on the weekends. Like I said, we're putting up a page on Conk News explaining all this, but here's the basic thing. If you tune into Blog Talk Radio, our channel, at 9 a.m., 3 p.m., or 9 p.m. any day, you're going to hear something. Something's running. So we hope you do that. And I want to thank you folks for listening. I'm glad to be back from the COVID thing. It was just terrible, terrible pain in the ass. And that's it for tonight. We'll see you on Wednesday. Hank will see you on Tuesday. Take care, everybody.